Welcome to Driven to Business with your host, Eddie Mayfield. Driven to Business is a business forum program that focuses on success principles in business. And now, it's time for Driven to Business.
Good morning. Welcome to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. Glad you're here. We're going to be talking today about problem solving. I almost started to call the program troubleshooting, but I figured that was a little bit too techie nerd of a term to use. Although, here in the first segment, I am actually going to go over some troubleshooting techniques with you, and we'll segue that into a business type situation. I made a living most of my adult life, in troubleshooting technical problems for people. And this is for the most part on electronic motor drives, which are electronic devices used to vary the speed of motors. You can, if you want to read more about those, you can go to our business website at emainc.net and read all about those. But in general, they're fairly complex pieces of electronic gear. And what our company does is we go into plant locations and place industrial plants, things of that sort, and resolve problems with them. Now, what in the world does it have to do with a business program other than the fact that it's a business? Making a living troubleshooting things most of my life and then hiring and helping to train other people to do that, developed a few techniques in doing that. And what I've come to notice is that the techniques and the methods that you use to troubleshoot a technical problem actually has a fair amount of bearing on the way you troubleshoot any kind of a problem. So I'm going to take the first segment here and go over that. And I'll try to keep this not too electro nerdy, but I'll probably make a few mistakes in that area and veer off that way, but we'll try to pull it back from that deal. I did a magazine article a number of years ago about the art of troubleshooting, and it still shows up every now and then. I'm sometimes surprised. It'll show up in places that I've never heard of, such as the internet. And usually I get, they give me attribution, they attribute it to me. And I don't really care either way about it. It's a long, long, long ago deal. And a lot of the technicals in there are sort of out of date and not state of the art anymore. So it doesn't really bother me one way or the other. But there is a great deal of interest in it. And I've always noticed, I've always been a little fascinated by the idea and observe this myself. Let's talk about technical. We're talking technical. And you could apply this to, I think about electronic motor drive. You think about a computer or even your refrigerator or your car or whatever, anything that's broken and you're trying to find what's wrong with it. And we've all seen this. You've seen people who are very smart in certain areas, who seem to be very intelligent, actually, and seem to have a lot of knowledge about the equipment. But for some reason, they just can't get it going. They can't get it repaired. So obviously, there's more to that. And what I've always asked the question is, what is that? What difference does that make? So I sometimes think about the art of troubleshooting. It's really a little more difficult to teach. I can tell you this from experience. It's more difficult to teach the art of troubleshooting electronic equipment than it is to teach the theory of electronic equipment. The same thing would be true if you were dealing with an air conditioning system or, again, with something mechanical like an automobile engine or something like that. Because troubleshooting, there are certain parts of troubleshooting that don't necessarily coincide strictly with knowledge. You will occasionally find, this is not the greatest, you will occasionally find a guy that is just a good troubleshooter that can go after a piece of equipment or, again, whether this is an air conditioner or a refrigerator or electronic computer or electronic motor drive in my case or whatever, but just from the fact that they have good troubleshooting techniques, they figure out the problem even when they don't fully understand the equipment. Some I've noticed over the years, and I've kind of pondered what that is. And what we've tried to do at our company is to both to be certain that people do have the basic competency of understanding the theory of the equipment fully, understand that fully. But on top of that, layer on top of that, troubleshooting techniques that help them to, in front of a customer, quickly and confidently repair their equipment and get them going, which is what we get paid for doing. We have a great reputation in this area, and if we were not able to do that, we would no longer have a good thing. So here are a few things about troubleshooters that I've noticed over the years. I'll talk to you about it. The first one is confidence. I've seen people with confidence that were not good troubleshooters. Let me say that. Maybe they're overconfident. But here's the deal. I've never seen anyone that was a good troubleshooter that wasn't pretty confident in themselves. This is sort of a silly example, perhaps. But if you've ever looked for something in a crowded drawer or a closet or something that you weren't certain was in there, you know, you don't look very well. Even though you're looking in there, you don't look all that well. Most of us don't, because you're not certain it's in there. But if you know for sure that key or screwdriver or whatever it is you're looking for is in that drawer, if you know that for sure, you will thoroughly, thoroughly, thoroughly attack that drawer, and you will find it in there. The same thing happens when you're troubleshooting equipment. And although this program, for those of you that are just tuning in, we're not going to spend all our time talking about equipment. We're going to segue this into business problem solving as well. But it takes some confidence that you can get it done. You know, field service, I spent the early part of my career in field service. Field service can be very intimidating. I remember one time flying into a distant city, and I was picked up at the airport by a guy, and we had a police escort. And he and the police escort, I'm talking about with the sirens and the lights flashing, took me to the industrial plant, which was the biggest employer in that little town, where they had some equipment down. And the plant manager there met me and said, "I'm so glad you're here, and I'm really curious about how you're going to resolve this." Of course, I was thinking, well, I'm pretty curious about that myself, because it was a little intimidating to be carried into a plant like that. But as I developed confidence over the years doing it, and the confidence came from actually resolving problems, figuring out that I could resolve problems, and you become more confident, not overconfident, not arrogant, but confident in that. And I then develop the attitude sometimes that if anybody can get this machine going, I can. And I don't think you can be a very good troubleshooter or a problem solver without confidence. So we have confidence. The next thing I always talk about is organization. Lack of organization produces havoc. You know, again, if you go electrical here, and I don't want to over-nerd you here, but, you know, if you're going to work on a piece of gear and you're going to take the wires, let's say you're going to unscrew the wires off the terminal block and take them out, you better mark those wires. I don't know how many times technicians get into problems by this, even pretty competent technicians. They'll take the wires off and they'll think, you know, there's only six wires. They'll say, "Well, I remember where all those go." But here's what happens. They get them off. They get involved in troubleshooting. Some hours may pass. Now it's time to put it back in, and they have totally forgotten where all those wires go, and then there is a big problem. So you haven't just resolved. You spend a lot of time resolving a problem, but the problem is you've made another problem. And that's something you don't want to do. You know, in these days of everybody walking around with a camera in their phone, one of the things that our guys do all the time is if they walk up to a piece of gear and they're going to have to remove a circuit board or take some wires off of it, they take a picture of it right there. So when they come back to it, they can see, okay, the red wire goes here, the green wire goes there, the blue one went here. They know where to put it back without any problem. You know, do no harm is a great tenet of troubleshooting. If you're going to go resolve a problem, be sure you're not making that problem worse. And we've actually, in our company, had to fight. This is a more common problem than you might imagine in professional organizations even that do troubleshooting. We've had to follow other people onto sites that had been there several weeks and had resolved actually a fairly complex problem there before we got there. And they had done that. But by being disorganized, when it came time to put the equipment back together, they put it back together in a wrong fashion. Circuit boards were not in the right place. Wires were not in the right place. Programming parameters that should have been put back in there were not put back in there. They just were not organized in the approach. And they had to have another company, us, come in behind them and basically clean up a mistake, a problem that they made, even after they'd done a good job of resolving a much more complex problem than this organization. So that's the thing. Or be organized. That's part of resolving problems. Be organized. So be confident and be organized. Next thing I talk to people about is having perspective, is seeing the big picture. You know, when you concentrate on a problem, this is whether it's in your business situation or even an electronic piece of gear, it's the tendency is to become very myopic and just look too close at the problem and you don't see the big picture. You know, they told me that the problem was in this area of the machine, so I'm not looking anywhere else But in this area of the machine, when in fact the problem is, that is not where the problem is. You have to back out and look at it. You have to, in our terms, you have to look at the system. You have to back out and look at the system. Is the problem systemic? Is this a problem outside of an area? You know, sometimes we'll be called in to work on a piece of gear, an electronic motor drive. And when we get there, the customer is 100% convinced the problem is an electronic motor drive. But the fact is, that is not the problem. The problem is upstream or downstream of that. And it becomes your job as somebody troubleshooting to be able to look at that and back up and look at the big picture and say, this symptom, this is not, you know, where you're thinking the problem is not where it is. We've got to broaden the scope here and look a little wider to get it done. Great idea. And, you know, one of the ways you can kind of hear that is just by listening to people. When people give you clues about things, you know, we'll go in somewhere and they'll say, well, you know, they call you and they say, hey, we've suddenly developed this problem in the machine, and you're working on it. And you'll hear some guy saying, and you will ask a question. So we'll say, have you made any changes recently? I said, well, you know, we did change the motor last night, right before this all started. Well, that's a pretty interesting piece of a clue right there. And say, well, why don't we go take a look at that motor before I start ripping this entire machine apart? Otherwise, and see if perhaps that's not where it is. Another thing, so we talk about confidence, organization, perspective, and another thing I'd mention is keep an open mind. It may seem like a strange attribute, but you know, when you go in, and let's say that this can happen to any of us. Let's say that you've got I don't know, you name any equipment you want to, and you've resolved a problem with that equipment several times. You always go in and it's, you know, you have to push this button or reset that breaker or do something, and it resolves the problem. And you've done this 10 times, and it's always resolved that problem. Well, then you go in one time and you flip that breaker, and that does not resolve the problem. You know, this is crazy, but there's a real tendency to just keep on flipping the breaker. Say, well, I know it's the breaker. It always is. But it's not so. You've developed a closed mind. You continue looking at something even when the evidence tells you something entirely different. We're going to talk more about this when we go on today. You're listening to Driven New Business. By the way, we're streaming live on biz1190.com. Today's program will be podcast on eddiemayfield.com and on iTunes. So check us out there. I am Eddie Mayfield, back in just a moment. Welcome back to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. Glad you're here. We're talking about, today's program is about problem solving, and I've been sort of going techie nerd for the first segment. I'm going to a little bit of this segment as well and talk about, you know, my background as an electronic troubleshooter, as an industrial troubleshooter. And again, you can apply this to your own, and in fact, I'm going to give you a couple of hints in a minute about doing this, just some very practical hints about it. But you can apply it to anything that you're troubleshooting, whether it's your washing machine or your refrigerator or your car or whatever. But we talked about some my observations over the years, what makes a good troubleshooter. I start off saying you need to be confident, not overconfident, but confident. You expect to resolve the problem, you will. To be organized, and by that I mean when you take things apart, know where they came from. Take a picture of it, label it. Don't just start taking, you know, the old thing, I put this car back together and I got four screws left over. Well, that's a problem. You know, don't do that. Don't do any harm. Basically, that's what I'm saying. Be organized in your approach. Don't do any harm. Perspective, seeing the big picture. Don't get so honed in on thinking it's one little part that you don't recognize that you know, if you're taking this hose off of a car, that's part of a larger system and it's going to cause a problem. So, I mean, know what that hose does and what part of the system is. And keep an open mind. Keep an open mind. You know, we see what we expect to see very often. And you know, if you're working on a problem and your guts, which is really your experience, tells you it probably is a certain thing, well, spend a few minutes and check that out. I actually call that stochastic troubleshooting. But if that doesn't do it, you need to back away from that assumption and open your mind up. And the problem is sometimes a lot of us don't do that. Poor troubleshooters just keep plugging away, certain on the right track. And we have had people work for us in the past that have done this. I've seen many, many others do it. Just keep on plugging at a problem when it's absolutely obvious that is not where the problem is. So keep an open mind. Expertise. You know, if you're going to do anything in the way of problem solving efficiently. You've got to develop expertise, whether that's in your business. If you're going to deal with people, you better develop some expertise in dealing with people. It's not always that easy to do, but you're going to have to do that. And the same thing in our area of electronics. You've got to, there's no shortcuts to this. You've got to learn electronics or mechanics or whatever it is you're trying to do. You've got to learn that. There's no shortcut. You know, we tell people, if you don't know what an adjustment does on a piece of gear, do not move that adjustment until you figure it out. Again, back in analog days, back when everything had little potentiometers on it, I don't know how many times I'd go into a plant to get a machine running again when all that was wrong was somebody had gone in there and screwed around with the adjustments and got, you know, adjusted one, it did this, and then he adjusted another one, and pretty soon he forgot where it was, and he adjusted everything trying to get it back. And by the time he finishes, nothing's running. Well, that's the way it is. You may run into that with computers and other things. You start going there and unchecking boxes on the computer, and you don't keep up with what you're doing, and the next thing you know, the computer, the program won't run at all that you had in there. It's the same idea. Develop expertise in what you're doing. And another thing that we tell all our guys, and I tell this to anybody that's troubleshooting anything, and particularly in my field of endeavor, which is electronics. And I don't care if this could apply for your musician doing a sound check and you got noise in the sound, whatever. And that is, keep it simple. Most problems are not complex. They're simple. But most people, this probably includes you, most people will jump to the most complex idea of what's wrong they can think of. If loose wires and dirty connections are responsible for the majority of electrical and electronic problems, and I don't care if that's your computer or anything else, that's what it is. You know, you've heard the old joke about somebody, and this is not a joke, actually. It actually happens where somebody will be calling for technical assistance on a computer, and it turns out the computer's unplugged. So they kick the plug out, and they didn't bother to look to see if the computer was powered down. Well, that happens all the time. So remember, you're supposed to be confident about things, not stupid. So let me run over those again right quick, the three things. Have confidence, not overconfidence, but confidence is resolving problems. Be organized in your approach to the problem. Keep perspective. See the big picture, not just the little myopic thing you're working on. Keep an open mind. You may go into it with an idea of exactly what the problem is, but if the evidence points you somewhere else, keep an open mind about that. Go where the evidence points. Develop expertise. And look for the most simple solution, not the most complex you can imagine. Most of the time, most problems are simple when you break them down. They're not complex. Here's one more little thing electronically for you, and then I'll get off this kick here. We give a little test we used to at our company, and we would draw this is called classic troubleshooting. It's taught in all electronic type schools. There'd be like 8 squares in a row, like on a little line of them, and each of them connected by a line, and we would say, you know, if you have no signal going in on the left, if you have signal going in on the left and no signal coming out on the right, in other words, it's not making it through all those squares, what's the shortest number of steps you can use to figure out where the problem is? And the answer is 3. And what you do, you divide it in half, you go right in the middle, and if the signal's there, then you would go to the right and divide, and there's only going to be 2 blocks over there, so you figure that out. Or you go to the left. That's called classic troubleshooting. It's sort of the divide and conquer type thing. Another term I've used over the years is called stochastic. The term stochastic refers to an educated guess based upon random tests and experience. And really, if you're experienced on a piece of equipment or you're experienced with a problem, whatever the problem is, there's nothing wrong with doing that. You can skip the classical thing, which may take longer to do, and go straight to your best guess of what it normally has been for you. Here's the problem. Talk about keeping an open mind. If your best guess isn't right, pull out of that in a hurry. Don't waste a lot of time there. And go back to the classic divide and conquer strategic type troubleshooting. Okay, enough electronics for the day for you. If you want to know more about electronic motor drives and the things we do, we have a lot of blogs about this kind of thing on our site at emainc.net. Check that out. It's my business site. There's a great magazine, there was a great article, I should say, in Forbes magazine some years ago by a guy named Glenn Lyopas. And by the way, I've seen the same article in a lot of different magazines. You'll find that to be true sometimes. If you will read something about a guy and then you'll suddenly search him and you'll suddenly find he's written the same thing in several or almost the same thing in several different magazines. And but it's a good article. It's entitled The 4 Most Effective Ways Leaders Resolve problems. Let me tell you, I think, way to start with, and he doesn't say this exactly, but he hints at it. Here's what I do. If we run into a problem at work, let's say it's a problem with a customer, a problem where something happened where we did not do what we should have done for a customer. The first thing I ask is this a systemic problem? In other words, is this a problem in our system? Is this something we need to change the system about? In other words, or was this a one-off? Was this just a one-time anomaly that happened? Well, those things take different approaches. If it's a one-time anomaly, perhaps one employee didn't get the word on how to do the system. Well, you resolve that very quickly. That's easily resolved. However, if you uncover a systemic problem, that's more serious. You have to address that on a systemic level and say, okay, our system is allowing this to happen. And, you know, my theory is if we caught it once, how many times did it go through that we didn't catch it? That's always my thoughts about that. So that's the thing to do. Figure out if it's a systemic or a one-off problem. You know, he starts off with a statement I 100% agree with. He says that problem solving is the essence of what leaders exist to do. I'm not completely sure of that, although I don't think he sort of backs off that statement in some of his writings later. But, you know, leaders need to concentrate on opportunities, not on problems. You can't ignore problems, but you concentrate on opportunities. Now, one thing he does say down later in the article is that many problems actually are opportunities, and I agree with that. Many times when you find a problem in your company, a problem with a product, a problem with your system, a problem in your sales techniques, and whatever you're resolving a problem in, it usually presents an opportunity to improve, to do something better, to perhaps gain more customers, to perhaps improve a product, improve your system, improve a delivery. So they are opportunities. You're listening to Driven to Business. Today we're talking about problem solving. More to come. I'm Eddie Mayfield. Stick around. Welcome back to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. Glad you're here. We're talking about problems and problem solving. I spent the first half of the program kind of talking about a little bit of a troubleshooting sense, an electronic, at least for me, troubleshooting sense, and then kind of relating that to business. But they do relate. They do relate. You have to approach problem solving in a business with the same organizational, with a confidence organizational perspective, an open mind that you approach an electronic problem. You need expertise in it, and you need to look for the simple solution, not the most complex solution that will resolve the issue. I was also referring to a very nice article in Forbes magazine by Glenn Lyopas entitled "The Four Most Effective Ways Leaders Resolve Problems." You know, problems do pop up in business. The reality of the workplace absolutely finds us dealing with problems. You know, your competitors can create problems before they do us. You know, you're rolling along and everything's fine, and all of a sudden a competitor takes your largest customer. If that's never happened to you, you haven't been in business very long. That can happen to anybody. And so these things pop up. Problems pop up. One of the things that he does talk about that I talked about a little earlier here, you should view and approach problems through a lens of opportunity. Because they do go that way. And, you know, I'll sort of jump ahead here. Once you do come up with a plan to resolve a problem, a strategic plan to resolve a problem, whether it's, it's probably at this point, if you're going to that much trouble to strategically do it, it's probably a systemic problem you're having to deal with. You know, I've often used the idea of there's a difference between an artillery shell and a cruise missile. You know, artillery shell is where you target in a distant target out there and you fire the shell and you try to hit that target. And a cruise missile operates differently. When you fire a cruise missile has ground sensing radar and so forth. So the cruise missile will adjust as it's moving along. And if a target moves, the cruise missile moves with it. And it adjusts to the surroundings, the environment. Most business plans need to be like a cruise missile. You know, many of us will come up with the best plans in the world, but things can change so rapidly now in a business environment that by the time you began implementation, what was true when you started is not true now. So you've got to be flexible with that in resolving problems. Here's a couple things he lists as ways to approach a problem. First thing he talks about is transparent communication. And this is where everyone's concerns and points of view are freely expressed. One of the things he sort of goes as a given here, he talks about, you know, if you are you're going to pull people in to resolve problems. Number one, if you've got a problem inside your company that's just systemic, you need everyone in your company, you need all the stakeholders in your company to buy in to the problem, to both the problem and the solution, which means you need to let them own it, which means they need to be part of the process of resolving the problem, not just you. Imposing a solution often doesn't work very well because the people may not agree at all. They may not see the severity of the problem in the first place. In the second place, they may not agree with your solution. Now, since you're probably writing their paycheck or you're their boss or their supervisor, they may go along with it, but their heart won't be in it. It's a much better situation to have transparent communication and get everybody involved. Just define the problem. And maybe you're not defining it correctly. Other people may have a different opinion of the problem. They say, you know, really, it's more like this. You need to listen to that and get them to speak up. Getting people to speak up is sometimes a hard thing. People need to feel empowered to do that. And one way you do that is by listening to what they say, actually listening to them. Don't cut them off. And actually putting value in what they say. Otherwise, they're going to rather not express themselves, fearing that they may threaten their job or something. And so effective communication toward problem solving happens because of the leader's ability to facilitate an open dialogue between people who trust his intentions and feel they're in a safe environment to share why they believe the problem happened, as well as various specific solutions. Now, again, this is something you have to cultivate. This isn't a standalone deal. You don't start doing this the day you have a problem. This is something you should have in your business anyway. It is an open environment where people are feel free to express themselves. You know, you can either have robots working for you that as soon as you leave the office, they all collapse in the chairs and don't do anything. You can have people like that, and there are companies that way. Or you can have self-empowered people that care about the company, care about your customers, and care about having everything run smoothly, whether you're there or not. And I can tell you, you'd much rather have that. So that's a culture you want in the company. We've had many shows here on Driven to Business about culture, and that's the kind of a culture you want to have. But encourage that, especially when there's a problem. You need everybody on board. You need everybody's input. Oftentimes, the other people other than you are closer to the problem than you are. Along with it, the number two thing that he talks about, besides transparent communication, is breaking down silos. You know, a silo. We often think of this happening only in very large businesses, but that's not my experience. I've seen it in volunteer organizations like a church, in clubs, rotary clubs and things of that sort, as well as in fairly small businesses where people get very, very, very siloed in their little area. You know, I'm in HR, or I'm in engineering, or I'm in maintenance, or I'm in administration. And don't fool with me. You know, we had a situation as a company here a few years ago, one of the worst examples I had about that. I'm not going to name the municipality. We were called to resolve a problem with a motor control in a wastewater treatment facility, and the fact this motor control was down, they were actually dumping raw sewage in a river. Bad deal, right? And they were getting fined an enormous amount of money every day by the EPA for dumping the sewage in a river. They called us. We told them, yeah, we could resolve it. It would be resolved very quickly. It's not a hard, difficult problem to resolve. It took them over a month to get a purchase order because the maintenance people in their little silos and the administrative people, the people that issued the purchase orders, didn't really talk very well. Were very suspicious of one another. Were almost antagonistic toward one another. And, you know, maintenance would call the purchasing areas and say, we need a purchase order issued. And they would say, well, you know, that's going to take us a while to do that. And meanwhile, you got another silo, the people that are having to pay this fine, say, hey, how come maintenance is not doing their job? And we're trying to do our job, but a purchasing won't issue the, well, no, maintenance is not, you know, and all this. That's kind of junk goes on. You need to avoid that. Don't let that happen in your company. Break down silos. Because they invite hidden agendas. and do that. You know, when you operate in a siloed environment where everybody wants to be a star in their silo, it becomes very difficult to make anything or anyone better. And that's when problem solving becomes a very discouraging impossible task. Breaking down those barriers will allow a leader to more easily engage employees to really just jump in there and resolve the problem. So that's the two things there, transparent communication and break down silos. Yeah, I have a better deal. Don't let silos form. Be sure you don't have that. Make sure that everybody feels they're part of a team. Everybody feels they're important. And if you have a problem employee in a silo area, deal with the problem. And it may mean getting rid of that employee. Whatever. Don't allow that to happen. Number three is open-minded people. There are people, and this is hard to understand, but there are people in a workplace that sort of enjoy creating chaos, don't they? They kind of, and I don't know if it makes them feel like they're more important, but they like to slow processes down. Think of the story I just told you about the wastewater treatment plant where, the people up in purchasing didn't care that they were dumping sewage and all the health problems that came along with that into a river, or the fact that the city was getting fined large amounts of money daily. Their little self-important job was more important to them, and being territorial was more important to them than that. You need people with open minds. And number four, he says, you need a solid foundational strategy. You know, he got an interesting statement here. He says, many leaders attempt to dissect a problem rather than identifying the strategy for change that lies within the problem. And sometimes it comes down to you're identifying the symptoms of a problem and not the problem. That's very easy to do. That's very easy to do. You need to fight that. But you're not identifying the symptom. You're not just staring at the symptom, but you got to go beneath the symptom. What is the actual problem? And attack the problem, not the symptom. And get rid of that. He has an interesting statement I've always thought is interesting with companies. You don't know the true potential and character of a person until you see how they can solve problems. I agree with that. You know, that's also true of businesses. You know, a business, you may think a business is a great business until you have a problem with them. And all of a sudden, you find out what kind of business they really are, don't you? You know, anybody can offer good customer service when nothing's wrong. But let something go wrong and find out what they're really like. You know, you're in a restaurant, and you've been there many times, and the food's fine, but one time it comes out and it's not good, and you call the waitress over and point that out. Then's when you find out what kind of place this restaurant really is. That happens. And I'll tell you another little thing that's just good to know in business. That's this. This is statistically proven beyond any shadow of a doubt. A customer with whom you have had a problem and successfully resolved that problem is going to be a more loyal customer to you, as a rule, than a customer with whom you've never had a problem. Now, keep that in mind. I don't mean you should make problems with customers, but people do respect the way you resolve problems. You know, part of the strategy is don't shoot from the hip. Figure out what problems are. Problem solving is, in fact, a great enabler for growth. It really is. The fact that you can resolve a problem means you can grow your company. So the idea of you develop foundational strategies for how you're going to resolve problems. When you develop a culture where everybody wants to resolve the problem, and I think that cannot be overstated, where everybody wants to jump in and resolve a problem, and where resolving the problem is more important than somebody's little ego. I mean, I don't mean you should be rude to anybody, but all of us need to learn how at times, including you as a leader, to check our egos a bit, pull it back. You're not right about everything. And if somebody else has a better idea than you, acknowledge that's a better idea than you got and absorb that idea. Don't stand there yourself, but get a solid foundational strategy for dealing with it. Anyway, that's his four little things. More to come on Driven to Business. One more segment on today's deal with troubleshooting. I'll be back in just a minute. Eddie Mayfield, stick around. Yeah. Welcome back to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. Glad you're here. We're talking about problem solving, and we just in the last segment spent a little time talking about a very nice little article in Forbes magazine by, again, Liupas, who talked about the four most effective ways leaders resolve problems. And just go over those again right quick. He talked about use transparent communication. He talked about breaking down silos. Talked about building up open-minded people, surrounding yourself with open-minded people, and having a solid foundational strategy. Don't try to dissect a problem as much as you try to identify the strategy for change that lies within the problem. Another interesting thing I read recently is by a guy named Thomas Bateman, who's a professor at the University of Virginia in the business school there. And he was talking about leadership at NASA, and not just NASA, but in particular, a guy that I've always admired named Gene Kranz. Some of you may remember, if you ever saw the movie Apollo 13, Kranz was the flight director of Apollo. And he's kind of widely associated with a famous saying where he says, failure is not an option. Remember, he came up with that. But, you know, Kranz was a... Bateman writes a good article about him. Kranz was as Bateman says, a breathtakingly effective leader. One of the things he was kind of famous for saying is, let's work the problem, people. Let's not make things worse by guessing. I mean, he was, in fact, a great leader. Let's talk about working the problem for a minute. You know, some of us, when we go, I think intuition is valuable. I don't deny that. But some of us depend a bit too much on intuition. We too often go with that, and that can make things worse. But real competence involves doing things thoughtfully and mindfully rather than by hope, intuition, and guesswork. You know, following a disaster at NASA in 1967 in the Apollo 1 program where the astronauts died in a fire in the capsule, Apollo 1 capsule there, Kranz, is what he said. We did not do our job. We were rolling the dice, hoping that things would come together by launch day, when in our hearts, we knew it would take a miracle. And from that, Kranz came up with a no-go launch status check system, which remains in use. And he did what the best leaders do. He overcame the challenges via mindful, deliberative information processing and effective problem-solving processes. Leaders work the problem. Now, here's what Bateman, following Kranz's example, Bateman comes up with a few things that perhaps will be interesting to you. First of all, define the problem. You know, that's a big deal. If you can't define the problem, again, we talked earlier, don't define the symptoms, define the problem. If you can't define a problem, you can't resolve a problem. Define the problem. I think often in tech ways, we have sometimes doing this, we have, a problem will be defined to us in mechanical terms, when in fact it's an electrical problem, or vice versa. We have to figure that out. What is the problem? Is it mechanical? Is it electrical? What is it? And until you figure that out, you can't resolve it. Determine the goals and objectives. What's the goals and objectives about this problem? And then generate an array of alternative solutions. So this is a fairly complex problem. And use analysis to choose one or more courses of action, plan the implementation, implement with full commitment, and adapt as needed based on the incoming data. Sounds like a little too much, doesn't it? But here's what another guy named flight controller Jerry Bostic had to say about the mission control team when the Apollo 13 fire happened, which, that's what the movie's about. You know, Apollo 13 on the way to the moon had a fire. Remember that? Here's what he said about it. When bad things happened, we just calmly laid out all the options, and failure was not one of them. We never panicked, and we never gave up on finding a solution. Again, that's under Kranz's leadership and these dictums he put out earlier is how they would decide problems. And you all know the story of how they came up with this very inventive solution, a miracle, really, and got the Apollo 13 astronauts back to Earth safely. But as Bateman points out, Bostic's use of the term "we" is crucial. Because it wasn't just Kranz, that great leader there, that very respected and admired leader, Kranz, that resolved the problem. He had a team. It was a we. We were going to resolve the problem. And the team took ownership of it. We are a team, and we are going to resolve the problem. And we may have different expertises, and we may have areas that one of us are better than another in. But every idea, we're saving these guys' lives, and no ideas off the table. However we can get, you know, the CO2 scrubbed out of the air, we're going to do it. However we can figure out how to use what fuel they've got left to get them back, we're going to do it. We're going to work this out. And so everybody pulling together with expertise began to made it happen. You know, working well with others in a situation where that's the goal is to get everybody going. It does help to keep egos in check, doesn't it? And that all the relevant stakeholders are sort of taken into account in your company, and that you do that. You know, one of the ways you do that is communication. You know, good leaders make sure their teams know that they're important to them and that they value their input. I had my late friend out in Texas many years ago. We used to always say that, you know, it was sort of quoting an Art Linkletter quote, I think, that he had read before. It was that everybody you meet in life can teach you something. Everybody knows something you don't know. And that's true for almost every human being. Everybody knows something you don't know. Everybody you meet knows something you don't know. And you need to be prideful about this and ignore that. But it doesn't make you a very good leader. And it certainly does not help when you're facing a problem and you won't allow someone who perhaps you thinks a little less than you, but in fact may have the solution to the problem, and you won't consider it because somehow you're the big shot and you've got to come up with a solution. In fact, I would almost say that the goal of leaders is not to resolve problems. It's to get them resolved. The goal of leaders is not to resolve problems. It's to get them resolved. It's to encourage and empower other people to resolve problem. Again, back to Krantz, you know, that's that famous line that failure is not an option. Let's review a little bit what we've done today. I started off talking to you about a little nerdy deal with troubleshooting electronics and my experience in who can and can't troubleshoot electronic things. And it relates quite a bit to business. And this is I don't claim this to be scholarly or anything else, but it has worked for me quite well over the years. The idea that people that, so these are electronic troubleshooters I'm talking about, that these are the characteristics of them. They have confidence. I don't mean they're overconfident or they're arrogant, but they have confidence. They think they can resolve the problem. One of the things we have to do sometimes with newer techs is to help them build confidence. One way you build confidence is to help them resolve some problems. Nothing generates success like success. I mean, once they do that, if they need to be organized, don't make things worse. Don't just start pulling wires off or willy-nilly attacking a problem without having an organized way to do it. Have some perspective. See the big picture, not just where you are. Keep an open mind. Even though you may go in there thinking you know what the problem is, keep an open mind in case you're wrong, which you could be. And be prepared to, to use a cruise missile example, be prepared to adjust your, have your ground sensing radar on and adjust to the hills you're coming up on. Take the time to build expertise. Learn what you're doing. Get to be competent. And look for simple things first, not complex things. And again, in the electronic world, that is an ongoing problem I see constantly with people. And doing so, you'll resolve problems and be a better business person. We're here every Saturday morning, by the way, at 11 o'clock right here on Atlanta's Biz 1190. This is Driven to Business. By the way, if you missed part of today's program, it will be podcast on eddiemayfield.com and on iTunes. So check us out there. This is Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. See you next week.
You've been listening to Driven to Business with your host, Eddie Mayfield. Visit next Saturday at 11 a.m. on Biz 1190 for more Driven to Business. To learn more about Driven to Business, visit eddiemayfield.com or call 770-448-4644.